It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The State Assembly has a new committee this year focused on government efficiency. It's similar to a federal initiative created by President-elect Donald Trump, known as DOGE. Assembly Speaker Robin Voss said the goal of his GOAT committee, or Government Operations, Accountability, and Transparency, is to address inefficiency in government, telling Wisconsin Eye recently.
The idea that people don't have to work in the office, the idea that agencies are just going to explode with the amount of staff that they have and the ideas of what they're working on, I think we could do a better job. I want to find ways to use technology. I want to find ways to use AI.
And to learn more about public management and efforts to streamline government, we turn to Don Kettle, professor emeritus and former dean at the University of Maryland School of Public Policy and a longtime faculty member at UW-Madison. Don, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Kate, it is so good to be with you and all my friends there in Wisconsin.
Well, can you give us a general overview of what you see in Wisconsin's new GOAT committee? Of course, it's early on. What is it? What is your initial reaction?
Well, it's an important effort for sure, but it is always much harder to pull off these ideas about improving efficiency than often appears in the press releases. And the idea that you can just take a sword and make broad cuts and save money, create efficiencies without at the same time creating lots of damage is something that's really dangerous very often. It's the sort of thing that you have to do much more with a scalpel than with an axe.
Do you think there are reasons why it's happening now?
Sure. There's really two things that I think explains it. One is that if there's anything that we learned from the 2024 election, it's that the people are very unhappy, that they think that government doesn't deliver value to them, and that this is something that is an important issue that the Republicans in particular have been successful in capitalizing on. And then in addition to that, we have the DOGE Commission with Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy working at the federal level, and they are working hard at trying to find ways of creating many of the same kinds of things. So it's a broad scale effort that the Republicans nationally are trying to capitalize on.
So do you find that from the federal level to the state level, there might be some crossover here between a state level GOAT committee and what is proposed with DOGE, the Department of Government Efficiency, which, as you said, would be run by Elon Musk and former Republican presidential candidate Vivek Ramaswamy?
Absolutely. There's a strong connection here. The idea that the people at the state level are not reading the same newspapers that everybody else is, of course, it would be crazy. They're picking up on lots and lots of the ideas that are being generated at the federal level. And many of these things, of course, have been circulating in the background, both by conservative think tanks and, in addition to that, by the famous Project 2025 guide, which is a 900-page a monster of a book, really incredibly detailed and incredibly even heavy. You can use it to lift weights in the morning if you want, because it's 5 pounds worth of conservative ideas, which I think are extraordinarily powerful, which represent in many ways the greatest hits of the things that the conservatives have been working on for a long time. And so this is a huge effort that has been launched nationally and which is now being picked up by the states for, in many cases, the same kinds of interesting and fascinating efforts to move forward.
But in order for a committee like GOAT or DOGE to make these powerful changes, as you said, to take a sword and make broad cuts, you have to have sweeping authority. So how does a committee like GOAT, do you see, have that type of authority?
I think it's really a kind of a three-step process if you step back and think about a strategy. The first is to create a set of big ideas that you can use to try to drive it. It's a kind of investment in intellectual capital. And in many ways, a lot of it's already there. As I mentioned, not only from the conservative think tanks, but also through Project 2025. So there's a basic collection of ideas that provide a game plan. Then there are the things that you can do if governor, say, or if you can try to work things through executive action. the things that that executives can do on their own without legislative changes. And then finally, there are those things that require changes in the law. And the deeper that you get down into that three-point list, in many ways, the harder it gets, because it gets to be that much harder to build a coalition around those things. And so it's a complicated process, but it's not a single swipe. It's something that you can, in many ways, think of as a series of things that you can conceive of and then do.
So when President-elect Trump announced DOGE in November, he said in a statement that he aimed to drive out the massive waste and fraud which exists through government spending. In your analysis, is there massive waste and fraud in the federal government?
Yes and no. And in some ways, you can look through lots of items and discover lots of things that you just wish weren't being done. But wishing things that weren't being done doesn't automatically create waste and fraud. It just is a difference of political opinion about what ought to be done. If you look, though, at the same time at things like what's called improper payments, that is payments being made by the federal government for which there's not adequate documentation and which may very well constitute waste and fraud, then we have actually a pretty substantial problem. It's something that amounts to, according to the Government Accountability Office, between $200 and $400 billion a year just in that category. But the problem is that to be able to go out there and find it, you have to be able to have good detectives that are terrific at being able to use not only the current technology, but maybe even develop AI to determine which patterns of spending are the ones that we don't really have adequate documentation for, and represent people trying to sell the same wheelchairs multiple times, or creating bogus billing so that they can get reimbursed for Medicare and Medicaid and a whole collection of other things. And that requires not fewer government employees, but often more, because you need really smart people who know how to use AI as tools, people who know how to be able to root around and find those things, people who know how to be able to track down the waste and fraud and separate it from the legitimate programs. And that often requires more government employees, smarter government employees, to be able to solve these basic fundamental problems.
We're talking about Wisconsin Government Efficiency Committee forming in the State Assembly with a public administration researcher. Don Kettle is with us, professor emeritus at the University of Maryland School of Public Policy and a longtime faculty member at UW-Madison. We're going to get further into AI in just a moment, but I want to take a look here as Amazon's new 5-day in-office work week starts today for its employees. And in Wisconsin, you know, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss said late last year that he plans to propose requiring state employees to return to the office as part of budget negotiations that start this month. What are the sticking points between government accountability and flexible work, and where state employees carry out their job?
And it really varies a lot. If you look at state employees, you can have, for example, the people who work in the prisons, for example. And you would not want to say, okay, remote work is okay, because those people obviously can't guard prisoners if they're sitting at home. But on the other hand, you can have people, we were just talking, for example, about AI. And much of that work can be done remotely by sitting at a computer and rooting around at what works, writing new programs, going through government records. And that work can be done from home as well. And there's actually a fair amount of research that says that at the very worst, it doesn't make things any worse. And then on the other hand, it could actually improve the efficiency and the productivity of government employees. Add to that, there is a lot of research too on top of that, that one of the things that COVID did was to give both workers a chance to be able to see how well they could work at home, and how, in particular, remote work can support two-income households, where you can find ways of taking care of the kids and do your work at the same time. And it's proven to be an effective way both of recruiting government employees and also to make sure that they are as productive as possible. If you begin forcing people to come to the office, then especially some of the very smartest people may decide, you know, I can get jobs in the private sector doing much of the same kind of work, maybe as a contractor working for government, and people may decide to leave. So it's a matter of balancing the nature of the work with the ways of trying to make work more productive, but at the same time of understanding that an important issue that we face is finding ways of recruiting and maintaining the next generation of workers as well. And for the next generation of workers, work-life balance is extraordinarily important. So that what we have is the idea of the five-day work week has become a kind of a conservative symbol about how it is that we're going to be tough on government employees, but separating how to be tough on government employees from the mission and how to ensure productivity is something that often is very difficult to try to connect.
Do you anticipate in this toughness government layoffs through these efficiency efforts? What might happen to jobs in government?
Well, first of all, one of the prime supporters of the idea of remote work has, of course, been public employee unions, and the conservatives have been interested in trying to do all they can try to weaken the power of those unions, for starters. That's one thing. Second thing is that it's an effort to try to drive some government employees away, and because there is a not too thinly veiled hope on the part of some Republicans that by making it tougher for people to work, that is to force them to come to work 5 days a week, then some people may just leave. And then ultimately there may be layoffs, because we can see a debate coming up that says, you know, we have things that government's doing that it shouldn't be doing. And the way that we can try to deal with that is maybe not by repealing the laws, but by laying off the people who are responsible for administering them. And so that the big series of issues out there, the chain of actions we can anticipate, I think are ultimately designed on one scale, at least, to try to reduce the size of government and to reduce the number of government employees.
Don, thank you so much for your insights. Thanks for joining us.
It's so good to be with you, and I wish all my friends there in Wisconsin a very happy new year.
And to you. Don Kettle is Professor Emeritus and former Dean at the University of Maryland School of Public Policy, longtime faculty member at UW-Madison. We've been talking about new efforts by Republicans to address inefficiencies in government at the state and federal level.